I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This week, I want to talk about the resignation of former mayor Catherine Pugh and the events that led up to it, as well as, you know, what her resignation means for the city. So, yeah, I had added a little intro, a little update to last week's episode that, you know, full disclosure, I had pre-recorded the week prior. But anyway, so I'd added a little update, and I had delivered the episode a little bit later in the day than I normally would because I was waiting to hear an announcement about Mayor Pugh and the status of, you know, her health condition, I guess. We weren't really sure when we heard the announcement, when the announcement was placed that there was going to be a press conference on last Thursday. We weren't really sure what it was going to be about, but there was tons of speculation. And anyway, I had shared that my coworker and I, we, you know, we talk about politics in the office because, you know, the political climate has a lot to do or impacts greatly the success or challenges that the organization that I work for will deal with, especially locally and statewide too, but definitely locally. Anyhow, so, you know, we've always kind of kept our ear to the ground, and especially when the Healthy Holly scandal popped up, you know, we were wondering what that could mean for, you know, and everyone else too, what this could mean for Catherine Pugh's career. What does that mean for her office? Like, is she going to jail? Like, you know, all of that stuff. And anyway, so, you know, I follow a lot of reporters, and I've shared this in episodes before that I follow a lot of reporters. And so it was on that Wednesday where I conferred with my colleague, and, you know, she had heard, and then I had also heard through these reporters, these Baltimore Sun reporters that I follow, that there was going to be some sort of, or there's some things that were happening on Wednesday morning. And, you know, I'd heard on Twitter a couple of things. Number one, that the Catherine Pugh's attorney had met at City Hall with the city solicitor. And at the time, I really didn't know what the city solicitor is, but I since have an understanding of what the city solicitor is. And if you don't know what a city solicitor is, it's basically an attorney for the city. So whereas the state's attorney prosecutes criminal charges against people who've committed crimes, and they're, you know, charging them or prosecuting them on behalf of the city, the city solicitor literally is the lawyer for the city, basically. So if there are any cases that are brought up against the city itself, the city solicitor is the one that's heading up that defense. So anyway, so it was alleged by Baltimore Sun reporters that the city solicitor had met with Catherine Pugh's attorney at City Hall, and he had given him something, and that the contents of that something were later in the briefcase of her lawyer, who then showed up at Catherine Pugh's home. And, you know, the Sun reporters, having gotten the scoop early, you know, decked over there, you know, not decked, but, you know, got over to her house, to greet her attorney and ask those questions. Like, you know, what is this? What are you delivering? What did the city solicitor, give you? And what was it for the mayor? And what does this mean for the mayor? Is there going to be some announcement? And at the time, he took no questions. He wasn't talking at all. Basically, he was just, you know, no comment really. And he was just going into her home. And then a couple hours later, he emerges. And again, this is still Wednesday. He emerges and he shares a brief statement saying that, you know, there's going to be an announcement. The mayor's going to have an announcement the following day at noon, which was that last Thursday. And so basically, again, the speculation was, and again, because, you know, people like to talk, I imagine, and reporters like to be reporting. So anyway, the speculation even that night was that the thing that the city solicitor gave her attorney was a draft letter of resignation. And so, yeah. And, you know, bloop, that following day, not at noon, but at 3:30, something like that, her attorney goes in front of the press corps that was assembled at City Hall, and he, on behalf of the mayor, Catherine P. resigned. And so it's like it wasn't a shock because everybody was talking about it already and folks were expecting it. And I'll, in the later segments, in the next segment, I'll get into, you know, like, I mean, at this point you should know, but like the council, you know, trying to force her resignation, or asking for her resignation, and other leaders asking for her resignation in the weeks leading up to last week. And so anyway, so this wasn't really a surprise. It's just kind of kicked off this new, hopefully, this new wave, this new era. So I will talk about a little bit about her political career, certainly about the things that are important to this time frame, or at least the last 2 years for sure. 2 to 3 years for sure. And then, you know, talk about the actual resignation. And then kind of talk about what that means for Baltimore City right now and shoot 2020 at re-election, because some other shoes have dropped, were dropping before she submitted her letter of resignation, and then they are dropping now. And there's some allegations that are coming out about that. So all right, well, next up is just basically, in the next segment, I'll talk about her, basically a rough overview of her political career here in Baltimore. So Catherine Pugh is not from Baltimore. She's actually a transplant like me, except she's from PA, somewhere in Pennsylvania, and some town that I cannot recall at the moment. Anyhow, but she's a transplant. But because of the nature of Baltimore, the fact that we call it Smaltimore, in that somebody you met on day one when you moved here and then you fell out of touch with, when you circle back around 2 years later, you might run right back into them if they stayed in the area. No matter if you were in one industry and then jumped to another, no matter if you lived on one side of town and then you moved to another, Baltimore is kind of small like that. You're going to run into somebody that knew somebody or knows somebody you used to know. Or you're going to run into somebody's cousin, somebody's former, partner, somebody's former coworker, so on and so forth. That's kind of Baltimore. I learned that real quick when I first moved here to do my internship. You know, people really, you know, tried to impress on me, make sure that, you know, in this city, in this town, make sure that if you end a relationship or you leave a company, that you leave it on good terms, especially in the professional world, especially in the nonprofit world, because you're going to run into them again. And so it's kind of like, in that way, I think Catherine Pugh, I keep wanting to call her Kathy. Anyway, Kathy, I'm going to just call her Kathy. Anyway, Kathy kind of benefited from that Smaltimore type of feel, because the thing about it is, she's not from Baltimore, but she's been here for a long, long time. So she went to school at Morgan, and everybody knows Morgan is a fixture in this community. It also has graduated several from its very beginning, has graduated some excellent people. And I'm not saying excellent in that elitist way. I'm literally saying people have gone on to achieve great things, especially Black folk who have gone on to achieve some great things. And done some good for this city. A lot of politicians have come out of there, good, bad, or indifferent. A lot of politicians, a lot of innovators, a lot of critical, you know, some of our heaviest and most celebrated thinkers have come out of Morgan, certainly the HBCU system, but certainly Morgan can claim credit to having graduated and cultivated a lot of those leaders. And so you've got Kathy Pugh, who's among them, you know, and so she has that deep-rooted connection. She went here she went to school here, and then began to set root here. And then, you know, she also has spent over two decades in politics here, starting from 1999, serving in the beginning as a city council board member, serving long enough to try to challenge Sheila Dixon at the time to be board president. Of course, she didn't win that one. Sheila Dixon got that. And then when her stint on the city council was over, she moved to being a state delegate. And then from a state delegate, she moved to being a senator. Now, unfortunately, it's the senator part that this whole Healthy Holly stuff came into play. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. Anyway, so again, she's, you know, 1999, she starts her political career in Baltimore as a councilwoman. I can't remember the name of the district. Anyhow, and so, you know, she's rooted, she's in there, basically. And in 2011, she runs for mayor. And duh, she loses. But now, why did she lose? So what happened was, in 2011, by then, Stephanie Rollins Blake had well taken over Sheila Dixon's, basically the rest of her term, taken over to serve the rest of her term as mayor. Sheila Dixon had been booted out because of corruption, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, and so, you know, the same thing that just happened to Bernard Young happened to Stephanie, in that she was elected board president. And when the mayor is ousted, or when the mayor takes sick and has to take a leave of absence, as Kathy Pugh had done, the president of the board, the council, steps up and is acting mayor. And so Stephanie Rawlings Blake, after the mayor had taken a leave of, I don't know that Sheila had taken a leave of absence, but she definitely couldn't serve in her role as mayor. And so Stephanie slid into that role. And then when she was convicted, she just slid right, as you know, she just kept moving. And I only think she served out like maybe 1 year. And I think the election year she served, the rest of Sheila's term. And then, of course, because, you know, we've got this scandalous situation that we're out of in Sheila Dixon having been convicted, or at least at that, and maybe she wasn't convicted at the time, but she was definitely ousted at that time. And so you have this shiny new person who hasn't really done much. You know, she's got the daughter of a senator. Again, I'm just ill prepared, but anyway, so she's got family roots here too. Stephanie Rollins Blake, her father was a senator, or he was definitely a congressperson, the Maryland State Congress. I can't remember if he was a senator or if he was a delegate, but nevertheless, he spent a lot of time in Baltimore advocating for Baltimore. I think the Rawlings Blake, there's a observatory. The observatory in Druid Hill Park is named his namesake. Anyhow, so she's got this political career. She's bright, shiny. No big deal. You know what I mean? Like, not anything. Like, I mean, in comparison, she was pretty okay. And so, you know, she served out the rest of Sheila Dixon's term, which turned out wasn't a heck of a lot. And so people really didn't have a reason not to back her. So, you know, you've got someone that you kind of know because she had been board president or council president, and then served as mayor for a bit. And then, so you've seen her a little bit, and then you have Catherine Pugh, who was a council member too, but there really wasn't much comparison. And so, of course, Stephanie Rollins Blake basically just kind of won by default, almost. And I remember that election. I voted for Stephanie Rollins Blake. I did not vote for Catherine Pugh because I didn't know her. At that time, 2011, I was over a year into my stint here. Yeah, and so paying attention to politics, because that's what I wanted to do, because at that point I knew, 2011, I knew I wanted to stay. No, 2010, I knew I wanted to stay here. I'd come there in 2010, I knew I wanted to stay. And then I got a job. And then 2011, I was old hat at that point, 2 years in. And so, well, 3 years in for real. And so at that point, you know, I'm paying attention to politics, but I didn't know who Kathy Pugh was. So why am I voting for Kathy Pugh? I voted for Stephanie Rawlings-Blake. Anyhow, but, you know, so Stephanie Rawlings-Blake gets elected and Kathy goes and becomes a state delegate for her district. And, you know, she's serving, she's making things happen, backing bills and things like that. And then, you know, she becomes a senator. And in her work in being a senator, she's, again, making those promises, making things happen, saying what she's going to, you know, try to do, try to get some things done, especially for Baltimore. Anyhow, and then 2015 comes around and we have the uprising and we have the debacle with the handling, the uprising directly linked to or because of the mishandling of Freddie Gray. By the Baltimore City Police Department, and ultimately her poor, and by her I mean Stephanie Rawlings-Blake's poor reaction to the uprising, not really mobilizing our police force, not really mobilizing the citizens in a way that can comfort people and reassure folks that justice is going to be done. And let me just tell you, it was bonkers. Curfew, you remember curfew. There was a point down at the harbor, well away from any rioting whatsoever, that there were military envoys or convies or whatever, big old vans, big old tanks, literally at the harbor where you take your grandma and your grandkids and you go out on your little high school dates and stuff like that. You go down to the harbor, literally tanks lining up all those, the Galleria, the little shopping mall down there. Anybody going down there? You know, it was bizarre. Anyway, I'm off topic. Anyway, so you have this big mess and this big mishandling by Stephanie Rawlings-Blake's administration of the whole Freddie Gray case in BCPD, but then also the overarching community response to the frustration behind the mishandling of the case. And so, you know, 2015, the writing was on the wall. Stephanie Rawlings-Blake had some smart people around her that said, baby, this ain't you no more. Do not seek re-election. And so she announced that she wasn't seeking re-election, which opened the door wide open for who else but Kathy Pugh, who again had served on the city council for years, was a delegate and then became a senator, and she had some wins under her belt. And so now was her time in 2016, then was her time to run. And then of course, but she was not gonna be unchallenged. And so in 2016, when she was running for mayor, Sheila Dixon comes back up, and she comes back up saying, you know, I had made a mistake. And true, the reason why she was convicted for it was for corruption, but it was literally for misusing gift cards, and not gift cards in like hundreds of thousand dollars, but it was like a couple thousand, I believe. So anyhow, so she kind of runs on this platform like, I made a mistake, but I'm still the best for this city. When I left this city, I was doing big things. You know, things were happening for this community. I'm still that person for this city, I'm the person that the city needs. But again, I'm a voter, and I'm like, right or wrong, my allegiance is to a person who tries their best to do the right thing, but then also can admit when they just got involved in some stuff that they need to just set down. And my thing is, like, not that Sheila Dixon wasn't contrite enough. It's just the crime was so pitiful. It was so trifling. Do you know what I mean? Insignificant. It was like petty. It was petty. And for you to get caught up in that just, it kind of blew my confidence. It shook me for real. And so I wasn't the only one, because though Sheila gave though Sheila gave Kathy a run for her money, ultimately Kathy was victorious, and not even by a slim margin. I think she was victorious with a decent lead, because a lot of citizens felt the way I did. Girl, that was so pitiful. Like, you had your chance, you had your opportunity. Now, we were also coming off of, Stephanie did not leave. She didn't leave the city in great shape. And again, the uprising was part of that too. So, you know, so we see this fresh and something fresh and new in Catherine Pugh. And so, I rhymed. Anyway, so we see something fresh and new in Catherine Pugh. And so we elect her. And we know she's got a steep hill to climb in order to get us out of, a lot. A budget deficit. Again, no confidence for the most part in our police department. And again, still frustrated by the mishandling of the Freddie Gray himself, and then the entire case, and then subsequently the riot or the uprising. And so, we're just ready for someone who looks like a fresh face, but that we were familiar with, is a roundaway girl in so many words, you know what I mean? And not a girl, by the way, but you get what I mean. Like, somebody familiar, but who's been around and done some things that we could point to that were good for Baltimore. So she comes in, she's easily elected, and she comes in with some fanfare, but then also there are people who are trying to hold her accountable for things that she promised as a senator, as a delegate. And so, unfortunately, this is when things kind of, begin to unravel a little bit. So right off the bat, she kills a bill that would have raised minimum wage across the city to $15. And the thing about it is, she had previously supported the bill when she was a senator, as I had said before. And so it kind of left a lot of leaders, especially folks who were leading the charge to raise the minimum wage in the city to $15, feeling bamboozled. Basically, like, you swindled me. You were just talking that stuff, but you didn't mean it. And when you had an opportunity to do something about it, you didn't act on it. And then there was this strange bill that happened that I was just confused about, because I understood the premise, but I was confused about how you were going to make that happen in real life. And the thing about it was, she backed the bill. She and some other council folks, city council people, backed a bill that would carry a mandatory 1-year sentence for gun violations in certain parts of the city. Now, the reason why I was confused about that is, like, how you going, okay, so let's say that you've chosen 21217 as the zip code, and that's West Baltimore, so you've chosen that zip code as a zip code that if a person is caught and charged with a gun violation and they're convicted, they automatically get a 1-year sentence. Okay, so what's to stop people from getting wise and carrying guns or doing things in 21217, and they go right next to the other zip code? Like, in my mind, I'm like, how is that solving the problem? It seems like it's just shifting it from one zip code to the next. Like, that doesn't make any sense. It's not as if crime is relegated to just one zip code. It's varied and it crosses zip codes and even goes into Baltimore County. Like, you can't just, anyway. And a lot of other council people thought the same way that I did, because it's like the bill passed, but it got watered down so much that there was no teeth in it. And so, but nevertheless, that still was a scar, a scratch, a big gash, actually, in her career, along with the killing of the $15 minimum wage bill. Which, by the way, she cited that she was nervous about the bill's impact on small businesses. And the thing about it is, it just kind of goes back to, well, you weren't saying that when you were a senator. So what's the difference between you being a senator and you being a mayor? It's not access to information. Certainly. It's not access to information. What was it? Anyhow, but I know being mayor is hard, but still, you got to make those hard choices. And everybody knows, everybody who has some sense understands that folks around here aren't committing crime because they're just bad people. There's a reason. And lack of resources, lack of opportunity, lack of money is a reason for anyone else, for anyone to commit a crime. Doesn't make it right, but I mean, come on, it's right there. Anyhow, and so again, when you are not doing anything to increase the revenue that a person can get, well, what are you doing? So you're making it hard. The red line was killed. So you're making it hard for them to get to a job. But even when they get to work, because again, the way Baltimore City is kind of laid out, if you don't have a specific set of training, most of the jobs that you will be able to go to are in factories or in big old warehouses, which are out of the city. They're in the outskirts. And so you need to hop on the bus. You need to have transportation to get out there. And the red line would have helped increase transportation from the city to the county and vice versa. And of course, you know, that was killed. And you can't blame the killing of that bill on her. That was all Governor Hogan. He moved it from Baltimore City and put it in D.C. And I'd shared that before. But that was there too. Then, so let's fast forward. So 2016, you know, she became mayor. 2017, started to get kind of rocky with her killing the minimum wage raising bill and then introducing that WAC mandatory 1-year sentence bill. And then, you know, the red line being canceled by or moved out of Baltimore by Governor Hogan. And then in the middle of all that, you've got increases in gun violence and homicides as a result of it, right? Excuse me. And so in 2018, January 2018, Mayor Pugh does something that kind of sets a terrible dumpster fire rolling. And in the next segment, I'll talk to you about what that dumpster fire was. So in January 2018, Catherine Pugh, having had enough of the spike of crime, that essentially wasn't a spike at this point so much as it was sustained high level of gun violence, she fired Kevin Davis, the police chief that was hired when Stephanie Rollins Blake fired the other guy. And she fired Kevin Davis. Kathy fired Kevin Davis, citing poor results in curbing gun violence. Now, when she fired him, everybody said, huh? Because when she fired him, she immediately, and when I say immediately, I mean within maybe less than a month, hired Daryl D'Souza from within the department. And that hiring decision turned out to be a huge mistake, as it was quickly found out that there were some discrepancies with his IRS tax filings. And come to find out, he was committing tax fraud. He hadn't filed or filed correctly in years. And so he had to, quote unquote, resign, but he was gonna be fired. She probably told him, you gotta go. Anyway, so she's, you know, trying to save face from that one just by saying that he, you know, he quit, basically. He resigned. And so now not only do we not have the guy who was at the helm trying to turn things around. Now, if you liked him or not, we had someone who was stability. Whether or not he was doing the job is another matter, but at least there was stability. And then when you fire him, and then you quickly have to let go of the guy that you hired to replace him, and you don't have a replacement for your replacement, you leave turmoil, and you start to chip down, you start to chip away any credibility that you have, any confidence that the city has in you. You're chipping away at it. And again, remember in 2017, she began to damage some of that by backing certain bills or not backing certain bills that would have benefited or not benefited Baltimoreans. So anyway, so you know, so there's, you know, a couple of months go by and we're still hearing about Daryl D'Souza. And in the middle of that, all of a sudden over the summer, she goes and seeks out this guy from Texas whose name I can't even bother remembering or even looking up, who didn't even bother to tell his superiors that he was, even looking for a job. And come to find out that that wasn't going to be a good fit anyway. And so he stayed where he was in Texas. And we still didn't have an act. We had an acting police chief, but we did not have someone permanent. And again, you know, stemming back from Freddie Gray, the issue was these officers aren't being trained correctly. So you trying to hire from within, you're going to get more of the same. And so there's a lot of cries for hire outside of the department, hire someone else in a different department and from a different city, a city that is similar in size and similar in, you know, in terms of our challenges, and go from there. Let's try that. And so, you know, she did a search and lucked up on finding Chief Michael Harrison from New Orleans, who, I mean, you can't get better than New Orleans, really, in terms of a city that is facing in a lot of ways a lot of the same social economic challenges, a lot of the same gentrification issues, a lot of the same lack of opportunity for some neighborhoods, but not for others, as Baltimore. I think that's a really good comparison. And so, and plus he's not really from DC or from New Orleans. He's a transplant anyway. He's really from Philly. So again, there's even more similarities there. So, you know, she lucked out on getting him, mind. She lucked out on getting him. And again, that wasn't even till the end of 2018. And so, you know, it's not looking great. And so, you know, we got the side eye going on. And then she does something. And again, to not again, but one of the things that I've been thinking about is how much, you know, before her political career, she, I believe I was told that she was a PR person. So she had a strong PR background. And then once somebody told me that she had a strong PR background, I started to think about some of the press conferences that she had done and some of the ways that she had responded to criticism and the timing of some of her press conferences when something really, when like a real big shoe dropped. So like, for instance, when Daryl D'Souza was, when it came out from the Sun, good old Sun reporters, Baltimore Sun reporters, when it came out that he had been committing tax fraud, and he had to be let go, and basically he resigned, and the news media and the city wanted to hear from, you know, everybody wanted to hear from her. She, you can call me a liar, you can say that I'm overreacting, but the current, at the time, county executive for Baltimore County suffered a massive heart attack and died. And because of his faith, he was Jewish, because of his faith, the burial is quick. It was like a real quick turnaround. It was within a couple of days of his passing. And so she decided that she was going to do a press conference. Now, mind you, Daryl D'Souza had submitted his letter of resignation, and then the IRS or FBI, some federal agency, pressed charges or announced that they were pressing charges against him, like, swiftly, right? And so she decided to, on the day of his funeral, talking about the county executive, Kevin Kamenetz, she decided to hold a press conference like an hour before the service. Now, which meant that she had very little time to take questions because she had to go. And even in she used time, even in her press conference, to say, I need to go and say goodbye to my friend. You can't tell me that that wasn't planned. You can't tell me that that wasn't a ploy to try to duck, to try to answer questions, but not really answer questions, to be there, to be accountable to the city, to be accountable to the citizens, but not really be accountable. Do you know what I mean? I just thought the timing was so poor, but I mean, if you call her a stunt queen outright, you know, oh no, that's not true. Do you know what I mean? But I just find the timing of that real, real funny. And then, I mean, the timing of her press conferences just kept getting funnier. Because then, toward the end of 2019? When did this start? No. It was February. It was January 2019. This Baltimore Sun reporters, those doggone pesky reporters, start asking questions, start poking around, and here comes Healthy Holly. And then we start to learn that, you know, she's an author. She's written this book, but she's been paid for it. And we don't see so many copies of this doggone book. And then when we get our hands on this doggone book, it's not really written real well. But you've been paid handsomely by University of Maryland. What is it? UMMS, University of Maryland Medical System, for this not so well worded, well written children's book, series of children's books. Handsomely. Not only were you paid handsomely for this book that is questionable. Whatever, you could argue that some children's books just aren't wooden rail, but that doesn't mean that they're not good books for kids. Anyhow, but not only were you paid handsomely for this book by the medical system, the UMMS medical system, I had to slow it down, but you were paid while being a member on their board, while you were a senator. So you've been getting money since what? Maybe not 2011, but for a minute. Off this book. So the shoes start to drop, and then we start to say, well, right around the time of her election and her candidacy for mayor, you know, certain people paid, donated to her campaign, and then subsequently they got like sweetheart deals, you know. And now we're talking about Kaiser Permanente. We're looking at JHU and the fact that that bill passed for them to have security on campus or a private police on campus, and the timing of the donation of this, one of the provost and some high officials in JHU, and the timing of those donations, and then when that bill was set forth in the city. Oh my goodness. I don't know. But and now today, you know, as we're thinking about some of the more of the fallout, you know, I heard that now there are certain council people who aren't seeking re-election. Now, it could be that, you know, some of these folks have been around for decades and they're tired. They want to sit down in a corner. It also could be that maybe some more shoes are going to drop, because the whole JHU thing was real late in dropping. So it was like the UMMS, you know, caught it. Then Kaiser caught it. Then some other donors caught it. And now, you know, a month or two later, now you got JHU catching it. And so, I don't know. It just leaves you. It's like all of these. It's like it makes the mind wonder. And it makes you kind of want to think, well, why aren't you seeking re-election? What's going on with that? Again, it could be nothing. But then again, it could be everything. And so... So yeah, it's just like, oof. So like, what's, so you know, so all of this thing happens, and then like last week, she resigns, right? And she has her attorney read this letter. And then the acting mayor, Bernard C. Jack Young, he releases a statement too. And I have thoughts on that as well. And it's like, what in the heck does all of this mean for 2020? What does this mean for the city? I'm comfortable right now in the police chief we have. He's got a good background. He's got a good pedigree. Okay. In terms of his political, in terms of his work career. All right. Let's see what you can do, because we need help. Because the day after, was it the day or the weekend? The weekend of her resignation, when her lawyer submitted that resignation on her behalf, there was, what was it, a triple shooting where two children were shot? Do you know what I mean? Like people were shot up over the weekend, over that weekend. Something's got to give. You need to get out there in the street. Do you know what I mean? And so it's just like, We need someone strong in that mayor's office. We need someone who's dedicated. We need someone who's above all of this. We need someone who's not a career politician. I mean, and you know what I mean? Just saying whatever. We need someone who's going to roll up their sleeves. And, you know, maybe Bernard Sujet Young is the right person we need right in this moment to finish out her term, because certainly between now and December 2020, it's a whole lot of time. A whole lot of time. And we can't afford to be rudderless. Like, we need direction. We need to be steered as a city. And so it's just like, this is what you've left. You've left us worse off than you've received us. You received us pretty in some pretty rough shape following Freddie Gray, but you left us in some mess. Like, mind you, you lucked up with Michael Harrison, and I'm like I said, I hope he's working. He's gonna work out. So far, so good. But I hope he's saying all the right things and he's moving. And certainly, he is shaking the table with downsizing some of the upper management leadership in a way to make it more equitable, I guess. But you left the city a little bit. She left the city a little bit worse off in terms of confidence than she received it, because, you know, we just received a report a couple months ago that people are fleeing the city in record numbers. It's shrinking. More people are leaving now than they have left in a while. That means something. You're losing confidence in the city. And so I love this city, as I've shared and as I will continue to share. And I want to see it get better. But who's going to help us get there? Is it Bernard? I don't know. So as I close this episode, let me just read you, I'm going to read you a couple of statements. So first, I'm going to read you the actual resignation letter from Mayor Pugh that was written by the city solicitor, Andre Davis, and read by her attorney, Catherine Pugh's attorney. And it is dated May 2nd, 2019. Now, mind you, the two is written in because clearly this was a draft like the Baltimore Sun had originally reported that they weren't sure when it was going to be signed. Andre wasn't sure when the former mayor was going to sign it. So anyway, it's addressed to the Honorable Bernard C. Jack Young. And they call him Jack Young. Anyway, President, Baltimore City Council address. And it reads, "Dear Mr. President, in the best interest of the people and government of the mayor and city Baltimore, City Council of Baltimore, I am writing to attest that, effective immediately, I hereby resign from the office of mayor, to which I was duly elected on November 8th, 2016. I am confident that I left the city in capable hands for the duration of the term to which I was elected. Sincerely, Catherine E. Pugh." And then it reads at the bottom, "Approved for legal form and sufficiency by Andre M. Davis, City Solicitor." Which, again, I didn't know until this incident what the heck a solicitor did, but now I know. It's the city's attorney. Anyway, so, like, this whole thing just, like, even in this little statement, it's like, she wants to remind everyone, I was duly elected. I was elected for this city, to run this city. And now I feel like I'm going to go ahead and resign. But I'm not going to admit any fault here. I'm not going to put any blame on myself here. I'm just going to say I'm going to resign. And I'm leaving the city in someone's capable hands. She doesn't even say your capable hands. She just says someone's capable hands. But we know that it was the person to whom this letter was addressed. Anyhow, it's just a short letter that doesn't really admit anything except the fact that she's leaving her office. And then, you know, I heard a report shortly after, maybe an hour after she had her attorney read the letter of resignation. I heard that Jack Young, he was in Detroit at the time. He had flown to Detroit to be a part of some conference. And he said through some journalists that he received notice at 3:35, and the letter was read. Her attorney, Catherine Pugh's attorney, read the letter in front of the press corps at 3:40, and which sounds shady, but at the same time, it's like, why would she give you time to prep and look shiny and new. Like, why? What's the point? Like, what's in it for her? I don't see anything in it for her. I mean, if she wanted there to be a smooth transition, that'd be one thing, but that's not her style. She's all, you know, no shade, but like, again, what has she shown? What about anything she's done that's shown you that she would make anything easy for you? A person who had been her nemesis. They had battled, her and C-Jack Young had battled over the years, her as mayor and him as council president. And probably in the council too, because he's been a council member for years too. Anyway, so he gets on, does a recording. Basically, he records a little video and drafts up a letter. And both the letter and the recording, the video, are equally kind of puzzling to me. But at the same time, he and his new staff and administration knew that they needed to do something, knew that they needed to respond quickly. Because again, he's been acting mayor and now he is just the mayor. P.S. when you literally within an hour of her lawyer reading her letter of resignation, I believe they swiftly changed. They removed all of her photos on the city's website and replaced them with Jack's. No shade. I mean, but at the end of the day, it's like, well, on to the next. So anyway, I'll tell you about the video in a minute, but let me read his letter. The resignation is effective immediately. And I think I cut off most of the letter, but, or at least the salutations, the greetings in the letter. I did. I cut off the greetings and I cut off the salutation. Anyway, the resignation is effective immediately. I believe this action is in the best interest of the city of Baltimore. In accordance with the city's charter, I will serve as Baltimore's 51st mayor. For the past month, I have traveled the city and worked hard to keep government's focus on providing essential service to our citizens. I've spent time in classrooms working with some of the brightest minds that our public school system has to offer. I have unveiled a number of development projects that stand as symbols to the commitment that many people have to our city. I have convened several meetings of the mayor's cabinet where I have stressed the importance of teamwork in delivering for the citizens that we're privileged to serve. I pledge that my focus will not change. I have listened to the concerns of our citizens and I will continue to work diligently to address those concerns. Although I understand that this ordeal has caused real pain for many Baltimoreans, I promise that we will emerge from it more committed than ever to building a stronger Baltimore. Charm City is wonderful and is full of resilient people who are working hard every day to move our city forward. You all deserve recognition, and I will spend my time as mayor working alongside you. I'd like to also give special recognition to and thanks to the thousands of public servants who've come to work each day under challenging and uncertain circumstances. You can say that again. And put forth their best collective effort. To the people of Baltimore, thank you for your faith in me, and I look forward to rolling up my sleeves and continuing to work on your behalf. A couple things. So like I said, this letter was accompanied by what I really believe is an awkward video. He is somewhere in Detroit. They found a quiet room and he sat down at a table, and there is a big black flat screen TV right behind his head. And I'm thinking, y'all couldn't have put him elsewhere. Y'all couldn't have put him in like a corner or something. Made it not look like a corner, but like at least not sitting in front of a big flat screen TV. Also, you could see the reflection of the lights in the doggone TV, which is not the worst thing in the world, but still, move the TV or move him. Then it's clear that he's reading from cue cards, right? Which is not a big deal. But it's also clear that he is not familiar with the words that he's reading, meaning not that he couldn't pronounce them, but that the speech that he was giving wasn't familiar to him. It wasn't second nature to him. So maybe he'd only practiced it like a couple times and then said, boom, let's go. And I know that happens, but in this instance, your first official statement as the mayor, you want to seem reassuring. And he seemed like he was playing catch up. Now, again, part of that was because of Kathy and the amount of notice that she gave him. But the other part was, I don't think he has team members around him, you know, who are equipped to handle situations like this. And again, like, who is to expect something like this? You know what I mean? It's kind of hard to expect something like that. But at the same time, I'm hoping that he can both get someone to help polish him up a bit in front of the camera, but then also kind of help him strike the right tone in his statements, in his written and verbal statements. Because even in that letter, a couple things struck me. First off, what programs have you initiated in the month that you've been acting as mayor? I don't know them. Where are they written? Where can I find them? Like, point me to them. I don't know. I haven't seen you out. I haven't seen you out. No shade. I haven't seen you out. And I see, oh, you know, if you go to the city website right now, you can see him out. You can see all the pictures that they have of him being out in the public. But like, come on, like, show me better than you can tell me. Do you know what I mean? Like, where's the proof that you had all these initiatives, and what are they for? Who are they for? Now, it could be that I was focusing on the wrong thing. It could also be, for, you know, the fact that The Sun and other news articles or newspapers were focused on, you know, Sheila Dixon's ouster, or the, you know, the foolishness that was going on with her. Not, oh, Sheila Dixon. You know what I meant. I meant Kathy Pugh. But like, because you know that, you kind of need to make it, you need to work harder to put your accomplishments in my face. No shade, but come on, you, the onus is on you. Also, you didn't do anything to become mayor except that you were city council president. No need to thank us. We're not confident in you as mayor because we didn't elect you. Make us be confident in you. We didn't do anything to get you as mayor. We didn't. The former mayor resigned. That's what happened. You didn't do anything. Now you're in a real place to do it. So again, it's not fair, but you got to show me better. You can tell me what you're doing. I want to see you out. I don't want to see pictures of you out. I want to see you out. I want to have heard that somebody saw you out about the city. You got to do it. Anyway, the political landscape is kind of changing. Like I said, there are council people who are not seeking re-election, including my own, which I'm kind of sad about because that was my council person. Like, I really appreciated them. I saw them out all the time, P.S. I always saw them out. And it wasn't like I had to go looking very hard. I always saw them out in the public, out and about in the district. And so it's going to be sad to see them go, but, you know, welcoming some fresh blood. But then also it's like, you know, so C-Jack Young, he's holding this place. He's mayor now. And I wonder if he'll run for re-election. I mean, he's in the same position that Stephanie was in. He's inherited some very troubling problems, and he's got the benefit of having a brand new police chief who's still shiny and new. So, you know, maybe he can turn something, maybe he can turn it out. Do you know what I mean? And who knows if he'll actually try to seek election, but I mean, he's in a better place than most to do it. He's currently the mayor. So it's his to lose if he indeed chooses to run. And right now, like he was asked early on, and he was like, I'm not going to speak about that because I just need to be, I need to serve right now. And that's the smart answer. So maybe he's already getting smart people around him, or people who are skilled in how to polish him up and how to duck and dodge these questions, because it's way too early for you to be talking about running for election for next year. You need to, get up with us in December, get up with us in January, or right before the filing deadline. Yeah, because it's a little too soon, boo-boo. Anyway, yep. So that has been, it's been an interesting couple of months, I'll tell you that for sure. Actually, it's been an interesting couple of years under Kathy Pugh. She did a lot of good, but then, like, she also did some things that were pretty damaging to her own career and then to the city of Baltimore. And I hope we can, I know we will recover. I just hope that it's a steady and sustainable recovery. You know what I mean? Anyway. That is the show. Please be sure to leave me a favorable rating on anchor.fm, the anchor.fm app, and also donate if you so choose. Even 99 cents will be a helpful contribution. And if you don't want to donate because that's not your thing, just tell somebody about the show. Tell somebody about this episode or the episode that I talked about the Game of Commissioners last year, probably around like this time last year, or, you know, any other episode that struck you. Share it because that's how folks are going to learn more and find this show. Also, if you're so inclined, please leave me favorable ratings on all the places where you listen to this podcast. So CastBox, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, all the places, Spotify, Google, Apple. Yes, Apple, Apple, all the places. I really appreciate it. All right. Once again, thanks for listening. Take care.